This is NBC News Radio.
Go ahead and say it. We're all ears. AM 1050, KCAA.
Welcome to Smart Health Talk with your host, Elaine McFadden.
Take a walk on the wild side. Will the birds and the bees survive? Right before me, my newfound hippie side. Once ignore these conspiracies online. Out the window. Sign me up now, make sure you use your smart. Take a walk on the wild side. Will the birds and the bees survive? Would your children
Welcome to Smart Health Talk with your host, Elaine McFadden.
Welcome, everyone, to Smart Health Talk right here on KCAA Radio. And you can always find us every single Thursday at 4 to 5 o'clock. So be sure and mark that on your calendar so that you cannot miss a single broadcast that we have, because we feel that everyone is important as the last one. Because what we bring you on Smart Health Talk is information that you probably don't get from your normal media sources. We kind of bring you the untold story, the other side of it that is probably the side that is the most significant to you and your family and your health and actually the future of our entire food supply. And we're lucky enough today to have Dr. Charles Benbrook, who is a scientist who has been researching pesticides and crops, farming, different things used on our food. He was actually a director of the Organic Center, which is a research arm of the Organic Trade Association. And now he's over at Washington State University at the Center for Sustainable Agriculture and Natural Resources. And we want to welcome you to Smart Health Talk, Chuck.
Well, thank you very much.
I can't tell you, this is really a great thrill for me, because I don't know if the rest of our listeners are on board with me, but knowing the truth, that's what I want to know. I want to know the truth about what's going on with my food. And all this stuff in the news lately, I'm sure, has done nothing but confuse people, because they start to think one thing, and then they're hearing all these conflicting stories in the news, and they're just like, well, what should I believe? And having you on the show is something that is good for all of us, because we are bringing people the real information that you probably don't get. And on our LA news stations, when that Stanford report talking about whether organic foods were as nutritious as conventional foods, they were reporting that, you know, you may want to rethink even buying organic. And I'm you know, first of all, I'd like you to just kind of like share with our listeners like some of the other distinguished positions that you've held to give you the credibility that you have to be able to talk about these subjects, but also, you know, what your opinion was on the way that like that last story was reported on, and how what that means to the people that were listening to the media reports.
Okay, well, I've spent the 30 years of my professional career studying what science has to say about the impacts of farming systems and technology on the quality of food and the safety of food, and how our agricultural system and food industry and diet affects human health. I've I was the executive director of the Board on Agriculture in the National Academy of Sciences in the 1980s. I ran a congressional subcommittee that had responsibility on agriculture research and pesticide regulation. I did a short stint working in the executive office of the president, and I've run a research program at a nonprofit called the Organic Center that did work on the human health benefits of organic food and farming. You know, one of the funny things, Elaine, is there in that infamous Stanford study that's generated so much discussion, there's 298 references in that study, and as I said to the Stanford team in one of my emails with them, I'm probably one of the only people on planet Earth that's read over 200 of them.
And we have you on our show. Is that awesome or what?
So, I mean, I've spent the last 10 years, you know, tracking very closely all of this science and actually many, many more studies beyond what the Stanford team considered in its meta-analysis. And, you know, I have to say that the Stanford team, it's a group of physicians that trained in the medical sciences and used to conducting clinical trials and you know, biomedical research. They took on a daunting task that involves, you know, scientific disciplines quite outside their field. And they really made some, you know, a series of kind of rookie mistakes, and their methodology really wasn't appropriate. They misrepresented some of their findings in a way that really angered a lot of people. And, you know, as much as, you know, I have the highest regard for Stanford University and the Stanford Medical School, but, you know, this was a flawed study. It was, and it led to some very inaccurate reporting and no doubt some confused consumers.
And, you know, how does that translate to the consumer? Like, when they hear this kind of stuff, what are the side effects of that?
Well, I think it perpetuates behaviors that are not in the best interest of either individuals or families or society as a whole. I mean, look at the debate about fully sugared drinks and soda, the debate in New York City over the ban that Mayor Bloomberg has proposed on greater than 16-ounce servings of soda. When there is this back and forth among what seem to be legitimate and respected scientists, you know, one group arguing that, you know, there's a justification and reason for this, and another saying that it won't do any good, that it gives rise in the public to this sense that, well, scientists don't really understand this stuff very well, and therefore I don't really need to pay attention to it, and if I like 16-ounce sodas, I'm going to continue to drink 16-ounce sodas. So it really, what bothers me about the politicization, if you will, of the debate about our food system and biotechnology and organic farming, what's the great damage from that is really sound, solid advice that's well supported by science is getting drowned out and covered with this fog of smoke from studies that you know, are either poorly designed or misinterpreted, or just conducted and released for strictly PR purposes,
or actually to influence consumers. Because we do know from past experience that big corporations that benefit from people continuing to kind of be complacent about their food and not caring what's inside of it, and the different chemicals put in there and how they are affecting their health, that benefits them. And so they want to perpetuate that mindset. And I feel like, you know, that's all mixed in too. And I hear what you're saying, and that, you know, this is, it kind of creates a complacency is what I'm hearing that you're saying, where people just, they stop listening.
That's right. And they don't take, you know, common sense, sound, simple actions that can really make a difference, when done consistently over time and when coupled with other smart and disciplined lifestyle choices. I mean, let's give the Stanford team credit for discovering that choosing organic food isn't going to cure cancer immediately, or it's not going to drive diabetes away from an individual that's dealing with it. It's true that you can't expect miracles from switching to an organic diet, and in effect, the Stanford team documented that there's no evidence of quick fixes and miracle cures.
Well, we just had Rodale, one of the online editors from Rodale, on our show a couple weeks ago, Leah Zerbre, and she had done a lot of research on the fact that GMOs they're showing that those are making us fat. There's other chemicals that are in our foods that are also contributing to making us fat. And so I just feel like those kind of things weren't factored into it as well, like some of these other things that we're finding, and obesity, you say this may not be a direct cause of diabetes, but obesity definitely is. And so if these things are contributing to that, and one of the things that kind of upset me is the fact that GMOs were not mentioned at all during any of the reporting on LA News, which, that's a pretty big news network. News networks. And I never hear in any of these reports of the Stanford study any kind of reference to GMOs, that the fact that when you eat organic, you're also avoiding GMOs. If they just would have mentioned that, I think it would have been beneficial. Did you experience the same thing?
Well, no, it didn't surprise me that they didn't reference GMOs. I mean, they also didn't reference thousands of studies on how pesticides disrupt neurological development.
What's the significance? I mean, I hear that, and I kind of get, what you're saying there, but some people may be kind of going, what? Disrupt what? What does that mean exactly?
It means that disrupt the normal pattern of division of cells as the child develops in her womb, in ways that alter the pattern or path of development of the neurological system, the immune system, the reproductive system. Those are the three that are extraordinarily sophisticated parts of our anatomy that have to get sort of put together and wired right. During fetal development, or health problems can emerge later in life.
Well, we have to cut to a break right now. Sorry to interrupt you, Dr.
Benbrook.
When we come back, I want you to talk about those things when we come back. So, everyone, you won't want to miss exactly what it is that's going on there. So, stay tuned for when we come back with Dr.
Benbrook.
And now a word from our Smart Health Talk sponsors.
Hey everybody, it's Deuce from Clark's Nutrition and Natural Foods Market. Have you ever noticed that the word change is found in the word challenge? We have, and that's why we have the highest trained and most understanding staff around. They will assist you in picking out the freshest produce, finding the perfect supplement, or figuring out which cereal has the most fiber. Whatever you need to turn your challenges into change. Clark's, changing the way you shop for health day by day.
Be sure to visit our website at smarthealthtalk.com. Welcome back to Smart Health Talk with your host, Elaine McFadden.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Smart Health Talk, and we're here today with Dr. Chuck
Benbrook,
who is a scientist who is probably the most knowledgeable person we could have on all of the different studies out there that have been done on, like, pesticides and, you were saying, like, different farming systems, right, Dr.
Benbrook?
Yes. Yep.
And also, I wanted to mention before we get into some of these prenatal risks that that have been identified in some of the research papers that you reviewed, I want to bring everyone's attention to a great review that Dr.
Benbrook
did on the Stanford study and just kind of, you know, the whole situation in general. And this was like an excellent summary, Dr.
Benbrook,
and I'm going to be putting the entire PDF on our page for people to read. And it's a really, it's something that's really easy, I think, for most people to comprehend, the way you put everything together. And it really makes some important points that we all need to know and think about because, you know, all of us eat this, what's in our food is affecting all of us. This is something that has no boundaries. When it comes to food, there's even like a lot of these studies when we see the people that are affected by these, there are no boundaries either, right, Dr.
Benbrook?
Oh, that's right. I mean, a consumer has no way of knowing what pesticides are in an apple that they're eating or they're giving their child or in processed food or in the milk that they drink. So you know, consumers are very dependent on this enormous regulatory infrastructure that has been put together over the last 4 or 5 decades in this country to try to make sure that our food supply is as nutritious and safe as possible. And despite tremendous progress in many areas and much more powerful scientific tools to help keep our food safe and nutritious, we have our share of problems, and many of them are self-imposed. You know, for example, all the added sugar and added salt and saturated fats that are in so many of our foods, which, you know, whether they're you can have organic food. You can have poor nutrition organic food, and you can also get obese eating organic food if you eat too much of it. So
you choose the wrong foods.
Yeah,
totally. that has no boundaries either.
Yeah,
calories. They say calorie is a calorie, but I don't believe that either. I believe that calorie can have quality. And it can have nutrition, and some calories have nothing, of course. So you definitely want to choose wisely. Now, when we cut to break, we were discussing, what's been discovered in women that are pregnant when they test them for pesticides. And they've actually found that a lot of these GMOs and pesticides cross over through the umbilical cord to the child while it's still in the womb.
Well, that's essentially correct. I mean, what the mother eats during pregnancy, and what she any chemicals that she consumes through her beverages, which would be drinking water and fruit juices and coffee, et cetera, become part of the fluids in the womb that the child basically is floating in and develops within. And so that's why this period of life is so incredibly important in terms of trying to avoid exposures to this class of chemicals that are called endocrine disruptors, because when a developing fetus is exposed to an endocrine disruptor, it can trigger what's called an epigenetic change. And that's a term, people are starting to see even in the lay media. It's a very important concept. And what it refers to is some factor that triggers or alters how genes are expressed. And by doing so, it alters the function of the genes. And if the genes are part of, say, our immune system, it can change how our immune system responds to a particular infectious agent, or perhaps might increase the odds of an autoimmune disease like a food allergy or even asthma. So we've come to learn that the most critical and sensitive time in a person's life are really the 9 months in the womb, and then the first few years of life. And this is where we really have to focus science to identify factors in our food system that are giving rise to developmental problems, and certainly pesticides is one of them.
And what about, like, I did see a study that mentioned IQ, that pesticides could actually impact the IQ, eventual IQ of the child.
Yeah, that, you know, I think that one of the most well-documented effects of pesticides in a particular class of pesticides called organophosphate or OP insecticides, which have been commonly used the last 30 or so years, one of the things that they can do when a fetus is exposed is alter the both the architecture and kind of the wiring of the brain in a way that reduces intelligence. And the very important paper was published about 9 months ago in the journal Environmental Health Perspectives that projected that exposure to these OP insecticides was the third leading cause of reduced IQ in the American population, just behind lead exposure. And you know, this is a very significant finding, and something that both regulators and the food industry need to pay much more attention to. Because I mean, look at all we did as a society to get lead out of paint and lead out of gasoline, because we know that lead retards intelligence. Well, now we know that exposure to these OP insecticides has also been lowering intelligence and has actually been almost as big a contributor to lost intelligence as lead exposure, yet we've done almost nothing as a society to get rid of them.
Now, as a society, what does that cost us when we are lowering the IQ of our children and we're also adding to disabilities, allergy problems, asthma? You know, what kind of burden does that put on us as a society?
Well, it's enormous. There have been many studies published by public health specialists and economists that calculate the economic value in terms of gross national product of each average point of IQ across the U.S. population, and over a lifetime, it's in the billions of dollars. If everybody in the U.S. population gave up one IQ point, we would expect, down the road that there'd be fewer scientific discoveries, there'd be less efficient management of all sorts of different tasks that human beings carry out, and there would be substantial economic consequences as a result.
I've actually talked to someone that was working with farmers way up in the mountains of Peru, and they are protein deprived there. And he noticed that he had a really hard time communicating with the local people because they had that deficiency, and he'd have to tell them many times to do simple tasks even. And we don't realize how all these different things can impact just our ability to even learn and hold on to information and utilize that information in a productive way that can lift our country up as a whole. Like you said, you know, the research studies that won't be done, things that won't be invented. It's just very sad, you know, that we're missing out on all these things. Well, we have to cut to another break, everybody, but we're going to come back with Dr. Penbrook, and I really want to get into, those pesticides on your food, you know, what happens when you bring them home and wash them off? Are they really free of pesticides? You know, what kind of pesticide load are we really taking in all during the day? And are those what the government says is safe? Is that really safe for our children? So everyone stick around. You're not going to want to miss it.
And now a word from our Smart Health Talk sponsors.
A precious deposit that came from the mightiest of mountains, created from the strongest forces of nature, and lie hidden for 15 million years beneath the surface of a remote desert, has now been found. A mineral deposit like no other, nature in its most perfect form. Minerals are one of the key foundations of life and may not always be complete in food, but you can now have all that nature has to offer in one pure source. Ion Charge Minerals bring you 57 ionic minerals to nourish your body with the raw materials it needs to rebuild, revitalize, and help generate energy within every cell. Experience mineral power and the new energy and endurance that is yours when you give your body what it needs to build a stronger you. Visit IonChargeMinerals.com or go to Smart Health Talk website and find out how you can benefit from the power of minerals today.
Be sure to visit our website at SmartHealthTalk.com. Welcome back to Smart Health Talk with your host, Elaine McFadden.
Welcome, everyone. You're listening to Smart Health Talk, and we're here with Dr. Chuck
Benbrook,
who is an expert scientist, and I mean expert with a capital E, on our food, how it's grown, the pesticides that are on there, the GMOs that are in there, and how these impact us, how they impact our health, how they work inside of our body when we eat them. And first of all, I'd like to, I don't know if you have this figure, Dr.
Benbrook,
but I know I went to try to find out, like, how many pounds of pesticides we're using now compared to, you know, back the last, with the last figure that I had was, which was for 2007, which seems to be all they have on the USDA site, was figures for 2007. And I was curious if from 2007 until now, like, how much of an increase in pesticide use that's happened.
Well, there hasn't been much change in the total volume in recent years. And in general, the trend over the last 20 years or so has been down in terms of the total pounds. But one of the reasons for that is that the pesticide industry has been successful in discovering new pesticides that work at much lower rates of application. So they'll stop using a pesticide that's applied, say, at a rate of 1 pound per acre, and instead use a pesticide that's applied at a third of a pound per acre. And while that would make it seem like pesticide use has gone down by two-thirds, it might actually mean that pesticide risks have gone up because the lower-rate product might actually be more persistent or more toxic or cause some completely different kind of risk than the product that it displays.
Because right now they're trying, they're on a fast track, Monsanto's new GMO seeds that they're trying to get approved are on a fast track program that was set up by our great government. And, you know, part of that is the use of those seeds that have been developed are to be used with the pesticide Ancient Orange, which brings back memories of Vietnam. So is that, you know, what do you think about the pesticide, this pesticide Agent Orange being used on our food?
Well, Agent Orange isn't going to be used, thank God. Agent Orange was a very toxic and hazardous product. And back in the 70s, the late 60s and 70s, when it was being manufactured for use in the war, the manufacturing process was quite it was a dirty process, and there was a relatively high level of dioxin contaminant in the 2,4-5-T, which was one half of Agent Orange. Agent Orange was approximately a 50-50 mix of a herbicide that's still used today, 2,4-D, and an old herbicide that's not used anymore, 2,4-5-T.
Okay.
So it's not accurate to say that this new genetically engineered corn from Dow AgroSciences and Pioneer that would be tolerant to 2,4-D is Agent Orange corn. It's not accurate.
Okay. I was wondering about that because I did read that.
But this corn is genetically engineered to tolerate applications of the, of today's version of 2,4-D, which has a reduced reduced levels of the dioxin contaminant, but it's still in there, and has been improved in other ways compared to the old chemistry of the 70s. The big concern is that I've done projections of the what the likely increase will be in the use of 2,4-D if the government approves without restriction the planting of the new genetically engineered corn that's tolerant of 2,4-D. And we're talking about a 20, 30, 40-time fold increase in the Midwestern United States, where most of our corn is grown, in the use of 2,4-D. 2,4-D is a very volatile chemical. It's prone to drift, and it damages other non-target crops at very, very low level, particularly crops like tomatoes, cucumbers, grapes, cherries. So it will become much more difficult for both home gardeners and small farmers and specialty crop growers in the Midwest to grow their summer fruits and vegetables if the local corn farmers in June and July are spraying 2,4-D on their corn to deal with the weeds that have become resistant to glyphosate, which is the herbicide associated with the first generation.
And don't we have like an epidemic of these like super weeds that none of the pesticides will kill?
Epidemic is not too strong of a word. There's now 26 confirmed resistant weeds to glyphosate in the United States. There are 50 to 60 million acres that are infested with the resistant weeds.
And what does that mean? Okay, so a farmer has like this resistant weeds. Well, one of the things that I read that kind of shocked me that I think a lot of people don't think about is that these stems on the weeds are getting like so thick and strong that they're even puncturing like tractor tires and damaging farm equipment that costs the farmer like thousands of dollars even.
Well, that's certainly part of the problem, but the big concern is that as these glyphosate-resistant weeds spread, throughout the Midwest, they're already essentially all over the Southeast. Everywhere mm-hmm. where Roundup Ready corn and cotton have been grown, almost everywhere in the Southeast, there's at least one resistant weed, and there's many fields that have three resistant weeds.
That must be upsetting to farmers.
Well, it's upsetting to them because they. Not only are they paying substantial premiums to buy the genetically engineered seed, they're spraying more of the Roundup herbicide to try to overpower the resistant weeds, and they're having to buy two or three additional herbicides to deal with the resistant weed population. So they're kind of on a herbicide treadmill, and it's driving up their costs. It's leading to more water pollution with herbicides. It's increasing the public health risks for those farmers and their families and their neighbors. And it's a real sort of slow-motion train wreck that's happening in our major agricultural regions.
Well, I just wanted to bring up this one thing. We only have about another minute and a half before we have to cut to break, but I just found this extremely upsetting, and I think it was like a perfect example on how we can't trust these companies. I don't know if you read the story that actually our guest from a couple of weeks ago, Leah Zerbray from Rodale, wrote about how Scott's Miracle-Gro was fined the most any company's ever been fined, $12.5 million, because they produced 70 million bags of bird seed that was coated with one of their pesticides. So these people, and the reason they put the pesticide on there was to deter rats from eating the seed in the warehouses. So it was, it was purely for themselves that they did it. But, to me, to be a person that loves birds and to be feeding the birds and to, in the process, I'm like giving them pesticides. It was just like, how could they get away with this stuff? I couldn't understand it. And I felt like, Miracle-Gro, that that was really a big slap in the face to their customers. And it just shows that none of us should really be taking anything for granted. We really need to be researching some of these different things. Don't you agree?
Well, I do, and I think we really need to push our elected officials to have the government step up the job that it's doing. We have deferred almost all of the responsibility for testing genetically engineered foods and the pesticides that are used with them to the companies that have developed the technology. And, you know, it's no great surprise that these companies perhaps have not used the most sensitive methods and really left no stone unturned to try to understand the risk that might be associated with some of these. So we kind of have ourselves to blame because we've allowed the government to sort of hand the keys to our food supply and our food system over to these private companies that have gained a foothold in the market, and in the case of the biotech industry, really control of so much of the seed supply.
They're kind of dictating what we get to eat.
That they certainly have a large influence over it.
Well, and the money, our taxpayer dollars, that's something that I want to touch a little bit on when we come back. And also that latest study that just came out of France, which was using the Roundup Ready pesticide and the Monsanto GMO soy. I want to get your opinion on that, and if you think that was a well-designed, significant study. So everyone stay tuned, because if you saw the pictures, which we'll be posting on our website, it's pretty upsetting about the tumor development once they were fed GMO soy and the Roundup Ready pesticide. So stay tuned, and we'll talk about that when we get back.
And now a word from our Smart Health Talk sponsors.
Hey everybody, it's Deuce from Clark's Nutrition and Natural Foods Market. Have you ever noticed that the word change is found in the word challenge? We have, and that's why we have the highest trained and most understanding staff around. They will assist you in picking out the freshest produce, finding the perfect supplement, or figuring out which cereal has the most fiber. Whatever you need to turn your challenges into change. Clark's, changing the way you shop for health day by day.
Be sure to visit our website at smarthealthtalk.com. Welcome back to Smart Health Talk with your host, Elaine McFadden.
Welcome, everyone, to Smart Health Talk, and I hope that you'll get a chance to go and visit our Facebook page at Smart Health Talk, and also Twitter at Smart Health Talk, and smarthealthtalk.com. We've added several new pages to our website, and we're working right now on building a really great reference with all of our great guests like Dr.
Benbrook
that we have on today that have been on our show and talked about these issues as Proposition 37 vote nears for labeling GMOs, which, of course, we hope that everyone will choose to vote yes. It's your own decision, but we do think that everyone has the right to know what's in their food. And there was just to let everyone know how important this kind of information is, there is a new study that came out of France, and I wanted to, on GMOs and Roundup Ready pesticide, and this was a very upsetting research article, because in there were pictures of these rats with giant tumors coming out of the side of their necks and the side of their bodies. And apparently they had been so – there was like two groups, right, Dr.
Benbrook?
One with the control group was fed organic soy, and then the other group was fed GMO soy with the Roundup Ready on it. And in a short period of time, they developed these tumors. So did you have a chance to review that study? And I'm wondering what you thought of it.
I believe it involved corn, and the Roundup was delivered through their drinking water, not as part of the corn. It was actually a pretty complicated study design that involved 10 different groups and multiple different combinations of the rats being fed the corn without the glyphosate, the corn with the glyphosate. There were also different levels of the glyphosate in the water. So it was a statistically fairly complicated study because the scientists had so many different groups. And, you know, like all scientists, they had a limited budget to work with. The sample sizes are small, are relatively small, which makes it sometimes hard to interpret the results. I think just like aspects of the Stanford study 2 weeks ago were sort of overblown and mischaracterized in the media, I think this French study is probably suffering from some of that as well. And I think it raises the concern about the potential long-term impacts of genetically engineered corn and exposure to glyphosate, on cancer. But it certainly is premature to reach the conclusion that that a connection has been proven. And you know, it's really a shame that we have been using this technology now for 17 years since the first planting of genetically engineered crops, and we've planted over a billion acres to them in the United States since 1996, and yet we still really haven't subjected them to the kind of careful and rigorous science that they should have been from the beginning. Carried out by independent scientists with government funding, who didn't have a stake in the outcome, just had a mandate to do the science and then tell the results that they found in a completely objective way. We just haven't done that, and now when a study like Seralini's comes out, it's going to scare a lot of people, and there's not much that that the biotech industry or even the U.S. government can point to say, well, there's no reason to worry about that because we've done all this careful work. It's just not there.
Well, and I also read that, like, I guess that you had, because of their patent rights, that in order even to publish research results on GMOs, that you have to get their approval first. And of course, they're not going to approve the release of a study that makes them look bad. So I was like, what? That doesn't make any sense. So there's definitely some work that needs to be done on that. So I also, while I had you here, I wanted to ask you about, like, antioxidants, because I know that's something that you've done some research with. And I think that's one of the things that we have shown that are higher in organic, one of the benefits that people get from eating organic are these antioxidants. And how important are those in the prevention of chronic disease?
Oh, I think they're very important. And especially as we age, the ability of our bodies to manufacture a number of natural antioxidants that our bodies depend on, that ability is one of the things that kind of breaks down as we age. And so the elderly are actually more dependent on their diet for antioxidants than young people are. And there's so much evidence in the literature now of multiple ways in which adequate intake of antioxidants is protective of health and supports a strong and healthy immune response.
And there was a new study, too, right? There's a new study that showed, like, fertility in men.
Yes. I mean, the benefits of adequate antioxidant intake, I mean, they almost seem to apply to all of our major organ systems and bodily functions in one way or another. So it's a huge problem that the government has not set a recommended daily intake for antioxidants.
And they are higher. There has been research shown that they were higher in organic.
Yes, but the the typical organic food on average is going to be around 20-25% higher in the antioxidant nutrients that the average American gets, only about a third of what they need to be fully protected from what's called oxidative damage or oxidative stress in the body.
And I thought what was interesting too was your health risk assessment for eating organic. It was 93%. You were more protective.
Yep.
So, okay, you got it from Dr. Penbrook. Now, I have so many more questions for you, Dr. Penbrook. I hope you'll come back sometime.
My pleasure.
And thank you so much for all the great information. And everyone, tell everyone that they can go to kcaradio.com and download the podcast, and they can also listen to Dr. Penbrook and everything that he had to say today. And also, we want to thank Clark's Nutrition for sponsoring our show and being such a great resource for organic choices. We love you, Clark's Nutrition. Everyone, look for them for the best quality groceries you can buy. And please join us next week, Thursday, 4 o'clock on KCAA. Bye, everybody.
Hi, my name is Don Sazi. If you enjoy the Smart Health Talk theme music, visit my website, www.donsazi.com, to hear the complete song as well as other great music.
You're on board KCAA's Inland Talk Express. KCAA, Loma Linda, 1050 AM, the station that leaves no listener behind.
This is NBC News Radio.